Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 8th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week we talked to Amelia Slayton of Seven Bridges Cooperative in Santa Cruz, California, about brewing organic. Seven Bridges has been providing organic ingredients to home brewers since 1997, and we'll ask Amelia why we should consider going organic. But just a quick reminder, the International Mead Festival is coming up this weekend, February 9th and 10th, in Denver, Colorado. You can go to meadfest.com for more details, or listen to our show with David Myers from Redstone Meadery. And here's another note for an upcoming event. I got an email from Rick Sellers of Pacific Brew News Radio letting me know about a contest in his area, and I invited him to tell you about it his own self.
Hey, homebrewers, this is Rick with Pacific Brew News, and I want to take a minute to let you know that the 24th Celebration Homebrew Competition is coming up soon, and also tell you how you can get involved in this premier competition. To begin, this is put on by the Gold Country Brewers Association, a homebrew club in Northern California that is celebrating its 25th anniversary in 2007. The GCBA is all about homebrewers, and with that in mind, the entry fee for this competition is only $5 per entry, which is about $3 less than the national average. The competition is AHA and BJCP sanctioned and is coordinated by judges with years of experience. This means you can expect a lot of feedback on your sheets by judges who know what they're talking about. Prize packs will be awarded for the best of show and two honorable mentions, and ribbons will be awarded for the top three finishers in each category. Rules are pretty simple for this competition, $5 and 3 bottles per entry, with submissions due March 3rd, 2007. You can register online by visiting goldcountrybrewers.org, and entries can be sent to a number of Northern California locations using FedEx or UPS. If you're new to home brewing, you can expect to learn how to improve your favorite brew with judging notes provided to you. Or if you're an experienced brewer, well, maybe you can take home some prizes. Whatever level you are, the GCBA Celebration is a great competition and a wonderful resource for homebrewers around the U.S. For more information, check out goldcountrybrewers.org.
If Rick sounds a little down there, it's because he's been battling bronchitis lately, so I hope he feels better soon, and I appreciate that note from Rick. I received an email from Scott in Portland, Maine. Scott says, I went to a friend's house for a brew session and notice that he uses a boil that would be considered very lazy compared to mine. I use a 10-gallon pot for boiling 5 gallons of wort and get a wicked boil going. Wicked boil. I'm sure it's not a cauldron that you're using. Is one method better than the other? Well, vigorous boils are important for a few reasons. First, it's important to get an active boil going to help isomerize your hops or to get more of the bitterness out of them. Also, especially in an all-grain boil, an active boil will help drive off DMS and its precursors, will help volatilize those DMS precursors. DMS can give you a vegetal taste in your beer. You know, proteins are also coagulated during the boil, and if you're reducing the volume of your boil to increase your gravity in brewing a big beer, having a vigorous boil may help you there, too, and to do that more quickly. Now, there may be a good middle ground between a lazy boil and a wicked boil. Now, you don't want so much heat under your wort that you scorch it, either. And if the wort's jumping around like crazy in the brew pot, you might risk burning yourself when you're stirring or adding ingredients. So I think you've got to get the wort moving around, get it active, but not so much that you scorch the wort or yourself. So, how's that for standing on the fence on that one? I think, I've gotten a couple of similar emails on a certain off flavor recently. Here's one. Chris from Oxford, Connecticut writes, I'm an extract brewer who's made 10-plus batches, and they've all been great. The last 3 batches I did came out bad. The only way I can describe it is it smells like green olives. Can you think of anything that this might be from? The only thing that I've done differently is I switched from using just bleach and water to star sand, and I also think the pitchable yeast started to come in a new-looking packet. But that's the only 2 different things I can think of with the 3 batches. Well, like I said, I've had a couple of listeners writing in about an olive off-flavor or aroma. And I asked if it were like vinegar, and the answer was no. So if it were a vinegary off flavor, I would say it was definitely an infection. If it's vegetal or like a cooked corn flavor, like we said in the previous question, I'd say it was DMS. And making sure to have a vigorous boil and making sure to cool down the wort quickly would be something to make sure that you're doing. If it's sort of a cheesy smell, I'd lean toward old hops. You always want to make sure that you have the freshest ingredients when you make your beer, because some ingredients, when they age, they don't taste good. But just from the information that I have, I'm thinking that some sort of infection is involved. You know, many brewers use Star Sand successfully, so I'm not wanting to blame, you know, switching over from bleach to Star Sand. It may be a time to take a close look at your cleaning and sanitizing techniques to make sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's and making sure that you're doing everything as well as you can in those areas, and to change out any plastic hoses and other pieces and parts that could be harboring some funkiness. But what do you think out there? Have you experienced an olive off flavor or aroma in your beers? And if you did, what did you do to fix it? Drop me a line at james@basicbrewing.com or use the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And olive is definitely not a flavor that I don't think I would enjoy in my beer. So help us fix the problem with our olive brewing homebrewers. Jason from Norton, Virginia writes, "On the subject of the whole homebrew and craft brew debate, I consider myself a homebrewer because I make beer in my home. Craft brewing I've always viewed as a commercial endeavor. However, considering that I live in the South, homebrewing has always had a different definition. People hear homebrew and automatically think moonshine and revenuers." Jason says, "It probably doesn't help that my grandfather was a well-known moonshiner in our area." And Jason says, "Not really deep insight on the subject, just thought you may enjoy that." And I did. I appreciate that, Jason. I can definitely identify. You know, sometimes around here in Northwest Arkansas, I get sort of sideways glances myself when I tell people I brew my own beer. In fact, I have to confess that when my buddy Andy Sparks, owner of thehomebrewery.com, when he started homebrewing, I gave him all kinds of grief about it. You know, I asked him things like whether he had to brew under a camouflage tarp to avoid detection from the sheriff's department helicopters and things like that. But, of course, now Andy gets the last laugh every time I come into his shop and then leave with an armload of ingredients. He's laughing at me. So justice has been served in that area. So, yeah, in the South, you know, home brewing may have a different connotation to some people. We've got to change that. We had a discussion about using grain bags in this past week's episode. One of our listeners said that his homebrew shop guy told him that grain bags were kind of passé. You know, nobody uses grain bags anymore. I got an email from Mike from Allen, Texas. He says, "For the brewer whose homebrew shop doesn't carry grain bags, go to Lowe's or Home Depot and get the 5-gallon paint strainer bags. Bingo, grain/hop bag. Well, a good tip. I appreciate that. You know, once you start homebrewing, a trip to the hardware store isn't the same after that. You know, lots of pieces of equipment can serve double duty on brew day, and it's distracting sometimes to go in for a light bulb and, you know, wind up coming out with all kinds of hardware. Tony from Kobe, Japan writes, "I was particularly interested in a recent contact you had with a brewer in Kobe. I, too, am in Kobe and would love to get together with other brewers and form a club. Well, I looked for and found the email address of Terry from Kobe, Japan, and I forwarded Tony's note, but it came back to me. So apparently Terry's email has changed or he's moved. So Terry from Kobe or any other homebrewers in Japan in the Kobe area who are interested, if you're out there and you want to talk about forming a club with Tony, let me know, and I'll forward your email to him. I understand that homebrewing is kind of being looked at by the surrounding society. I think that if you're a home brewer in Japan, you may feel a little isolated. So I'm hoping that we can get a group of you guys together. Well, before we get into the interview, I want to mention that we still have literally a handful of brewers' logbooks left. So go to basicbrewing.com and check out the banner ad, which will take you to the books page on our store. Or you can go to our little shop there, follow the navigation in the site, and find our logbook. Also, you know, we've been having some fun with the Amazon Associate orders at the end of the podcast, and I had a couple of listeners ask where the Amazon Associates link is. Well, look for the little banner ad with the Amazon.com logo on the right side of the page on basicbrewing.com. It's usually a black rectangle. If you click on that, it'll take you to Amazon.com, and then when you make a purchase, we get a small commission. You don't pay extra, so you won't notice, but we'll get a small commission off of that, and appreciate everybody who's done that. Well, now, one of the things that I like most about brewing my own beer is the freedom of choice that I have. I have the freedom to make whatever style of beer I want using whatever ingredients that I choose. I have complete control in making my choices. So when I received an email from Greg in Muncie, Indiana, talking about brewing organic beer from this past episode, it got my attention. Greg mentioned Seven Bridges Cooperative as the homebrew store where he gets his organic ingredients. So I called Amelia Slayton at Seven Bridges to get the scoop on brewing organic. Amelia Slayton, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And you are you the owner of Seven Bridges Cooperative?
I'm one of the owners. We are a cooperatively owned business, so all staff are part owners, and we also have owners who are not staff who are more on an investor status. But I'm one of the primary owners, yes.
So give me a little background on your brewing experience and the background of your business as well.
Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to remember what year it was that I started. I started brewing the year I moved to Santa Cruz, which was 1993. After traveling around the world, I got back and several of my friends had started brewing, and it just really intrigued me. And so I picked up The Joy of Home Brewing and actually read it when I was recovering from a pretty nasty flu and was pretty much bedridden. So I read it cover to cover, and that there was no turning back after that. I had to go out and get the starter package and start brewing. And I haven't looked back since. I've been brewing ever since, and I think the longest break I've taken is maybe a couple months.
And at that time, did brewing organic enter into your mind?
Actually, it did. I have a background in the environmental movement, and so it was natural for me to think about organic. And it just so happened there was one product available at that time to homebrewers. So when I started to brew all grain, my first all-grain batch was actually organic.
Oh, wow.
And that actually motivated me to brew all-grain because at the time there wasn't an easy source for home brewers to get extract, but I could buy a bag of organic grain, special order. And so the first batch I ever brewed was organic.
Well, there you go. So when did you decide to go into business, and how did that come about?
Well, the friends I mentioned that started brewing started an annual camping homebrew fest that actually is still going on to this day. And so every year people would get together at a group campsite and share their homebrew. And one year, in the midst of doing that, somehow we cooked up the idea to start a microbrewery. And I'm sure many brewers have been and had that similar idea. But, you know, coming from a socially progressive environmental background, where like we decided, hey, instead of going out and finding venture capitalists, let's finance this ourselves. And so we formed a cooperative corporation and started saving money. About a year into that, we realized that at the rate we were going, it was going to be another 10 years before we had enough money to start a microbrewery. And somewhere along the line, we realized that there was no steady source for organic brewing ingredients, and there was a niche there. And we ended up instead of starting a brewery, starting a homebrew supply business.
So you're, in fact, fostering lots of little breweries.
Exactly. And now big breweries, too. We do actually help source hops for big breweries as well.
Tell us, now we're all homebrewers, or most of us are. Why should we think about brewing organic?
There's a lot of reasons, but I think the most compelling reason is the same reason why people would eat organic food as opposed to non-organic food. It's about the purity of the product and the impact on the environment that producing that product has. And when barley malt, for instance, is grown organically, there's no pesticide runoff that goes into water supplies nearby. So there's, you know, no negative impact from that. I mean, every commercial growing operation has some slight impact on the environment, but it's about sustainable use of resources. And the something that is even more compelling, perhaps, are the hops, which are really heavily sprayed, especially in the United States. And, you know, some of that does happen to stay on the hops and from time to time. I don't have all the facts and figures in front of me, but one of our members is an author and just wrote a book called Fermenting Revolution, and he does have a chapter on the impact of spraying hops and the chemical intensive agriculture that goes on with hop farming and malt farming, or grain farming, rather.
Yeah, there are pests in the form of bugs, and there are also pests in the form of molds and mildews that the hop farmers have to worry about.
Right, and especially with the molds and mildews, some of the sprays that are used are pretty intense, and on occasion there have been EPA exemptions granted to allow the use of these chemicals on the hops. So, you know, that's, you know, if the EPA is granting an exemption, it means that the chemical is strong enough for them to severely restrict or prohibit its use.
So what does a product have to, or what do these crops have to do, what do the farmers have to do to have these products certified as organic, and how can they deal with pesticide, or not pesticide, but pest management otherwise?
It's definitely a challenge in the hop industry because, A, the hop industry has become so incredibly chemically reliant in the United States that the one commercial operation that got big enough to, you know, wholesale out large quantities of hops just pulled their plants and threw in the towel. But that particular field was put in place by a conventional commercial hop grower who was just experimenting around with growing hops and didn't really do anything different than he was doing in his other fields, except he wasn't spraying pesticides on the hops. And so naturally, every bug in the vicinity went straight for the organic hops and down it went. It's a different method of growing. It's a little bit more labor-intensive, but usually it costs about the same or slightly more because you're not spending all that money on chemicals. You're spending it on labor instead. And also you can command at least double the price for your product because it's organic.
Yeah, that was one question that I was going to ask is, what is the price differential if I'm going to brew a batch of organic beer as opposed to regular beer? What am I looking at as far as the price difference?
From a home brewing standpoint, it somewhat depends on where you normally get your supplies. If you're mail ordering all the time, you know, we actually can compete pretty well with conventional suppliers, and maybe it's 10% more. if you're used to shopping in your homebrew store and they don't stock anything organic, then you have to mail order it, and then you're looking at a much higher cost. The hops, in particular, are a lot more expensive. The malts and grains are maybe 10 to 15% more. So luckily the hops are the smallest portion of the beer.
Right.
But we have to import hops from, right now, organic hops are coming from New Zealand, Germany, Great Britain, and Belgium, and just nothing from the U.S., except for home brewers who are growing their own.
Does that sort of present a dilemma for you? Because you're doing without the chemicals, but you are having a bigger impact on the earth in that more fossil fuels are being used to transport those products from the farther reaches. Is that sort of a decision process that you've got to go through?
A little bit. I mean, it would be more of an ideal world if we could all have our own barley field and our own hop field and not ever import anything for more than a state away. But most home brewers are, you know, commonly buy Czech sauce hops and, you know, hops that come from England, because it's like spices. It's such a small percentage of the beer that the impact is much less than if you were actually importing the beer.
And of course, if you're a home brewer and you've got a little patch of ground that you can lay claim to, you can grow your own hops. So
yeah, in most parts of the country, that is very true.
Yeah,
it's not practical for everyone, but you know, definitely for, you know, there's lots of resources for people to grow their own hops, and I know that homegrown hops and the homebrewer's garden both have great guidelines for growing hops and include organic methods.
Now, on your website, in addition to saying that brewing organic is better for the earth, you also claim that it makes better beer.
Well, that's so subjective, but I personally think so. And we do have, you know, a fairly rabid, loyal following of people who also agree. It kind of depends on what what you're used to. You can probably brew almost identical beers using organic or non-organic ingredients, but the ingredients that we sell, because we only sell organic, are very, very fresh. Like, we don't have 20 different kinds of malt extracts, so we just have one, which is, we're turning it over so quickly that it's always very fresh. The same with our grains and, to a lesser extent, the hops. And, you know, that makes a huge difference right there. A lot of times, organically grown products just have a lot more of a human touch in terms of nurturing the plants and what have you, and often that translates into slightly higher quality.
On your website,
in the beer world, you know, it's growing fine hops and malts is a labor of love, whether it's being done organically or not.
On your website, you say organic malts on average have a lower protein content, which produces a clear mash, less haze problems. And you also say that organic malts generally have a higher mash efficiency and a faster fermentation. Is this something that you're just getting from your customers, or is this something that's documented and from a laboratory?
That is information I got way back when we started. From, I believe it was one of the malt companies, and oddly enough, it's one that doesn't import anymore. Hugh Baird Malt used to have an organic malt that they imported to the United States. I believe it came from there, if my memory serves me correctly. We don't have a lab to conduct a scientific experiment. So, you know, my personal experience has been with that malt versus their non-organic version way back when we started this business. I did do a couple of mashes and kept notes and everything, and did find a higher efficiency with the organic. And that was you know, just a home brewer's experiment, not a laboratory experiment. So I can't say from a completely scientific standpoint, because I didn't have scientific tools.
And if you if your customers are happy, that's a good indication that something's...
Yes.
All right, what do we have to do? I know that if a commercial brewer is brewing organic, they have to do things like run a certain rinse water through their system to get all the inorganic beer, you know, cleaned out before they can run another beer certified as organic through the system. What are some steps that that you've got to do? Do you have to change anything as a home brewer to brew something that is truly organic?
Well, if you're used to using a sanitizer without rinsing and you want to, you know, be strictly organic, then you would want to add a final rinse to your process. And you would probably want to steer away from using the more chemically intensive cleaners and any additives in your brewing. But most commercial organic brewing, they still use like a lot of five-star products and cleaners and sanitizers, and then they just have a very aggressive rinsing, often like a steam rinsing or sanitizing after that, so that any trace of the cleaning or sanitizing chemicals are removed.
And in the homebrew,
the main thing is just trying to keep it as pure as possible, and you know, using organic ingredients and making sure there's no cleaning residues in the brewing process.
And in the home brewing environment, if you're worried about the cleanliness of your tap water, you can boil some rinse water to sanitize it, and then use that as a rinse.
Right. And that's something I've done. Although I typically use iota-4 sanitizer, which is basically iodine.
Right.
And, you know, it's a simple compound that in the minute amounts, I just am very, very careful that I make it strictly to the recommended dosage by using the measuring cup and not making it too strong.
You sound like me. A lot of brewers use iota-4 to color. A few glucks in there, and if it's that color of red that they remember, you know, then that's what they use. But I'm a little more picky about that, I guess.
Yeah, my sanitizing solution usually looks like Corona.
You mentioned, making sure you have the organic ingredients. One thing that kind of surprised me, or I didn't think about, is the use of genetically modified organisms, and specifically in relation to corn.
One thing that a lot of people in the country still are not aware, that the genetic engineered products are genetically engineered corn is a good example, but also soy. It's just kind of creeping into supermarket shelves everywhere you look. And now they're talking about cloning as well, which is even scarier. But I don't have a problem with science as much as I have a problem with deceptive labeling and marketing practices, where it's not a requirement to put on the label that an ingredient has genetically modified or a product has genetically modified ingredients. It should be a consumer's choice.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I strongly believe in a right to know and a right to choose. You know, if someone doesn't have a problem consuming genetically modified food, no worries. You know, knock yourself out. But if you do, you should have the right to know what products you're consuming actually have that and which don't. And the way the industry has basically taken the entire corn supply in this country, I don't know if they're still doing it, but in years past they have, and blended genetically modified corn with non-genetically modified corn, so that it's almost impossible to tell, going back in the stream of commerce, what corn is and what corn isn't genetically modified. So if you go to a manufacturer of corn sugar and say, does this have genetically modified corn? They'll send you a letter saying, well, because our supply stream, blah, 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 we don't know for sure. So the one way to be certain that the products you're using don't have genetically modified ingredients, are the only way to be certain right now is to buy organic, because it's specifically prohibited to include in any organic product.
If you're using corn as an adjunct in your beer, or if you're like me and you use dextrose, which is corn sugar, to prime, then is there a reliable organic supplier for those products?
There is, but unfortunately the dextrose is coming from Austria, which is why it's frightfully expensive. I do have a contact. We're looking at getting another source for dextrose that's actually originates from tapioca instead of corn and is certified organic. So that's something that we might be able to offer soon. I mean, I'm constantly on the lookout for anything organic that might be useful for brewing that we can add to our product lineup, you know, just to make everything available to home brewers that exists.
So as an alternative, you do sell... you said you sell one line of organic extract. Is that a dry malt extract?
We have it in dry and liquid form.
So that you can use that to prime?
You can use dry malt extract, or we do have the organic dextrose. It's just a lot more expensive than conventional dextrose, which I actually contacted the company that makes most of the dextrose that homebrewers end up getting, and... that was where I got the, well, we're not sure if it has genetically modified corn or not.
What do you see as the future for, I mean, you've been in this business for a while. What do you see as the future for specifically brewing organic? Is it something that's catching on? Is it something that's getting more attention?
Absolutely. We're seeing a lot more breweries brewing organic, and that usually... gets homebrewers' attention when they see more and more organic beers on the shelf. The organic products industry in general is growing rapidly. It's been growing at a 20% in annual increase for years and years. And the more tampering that goes on with the food supply in terms of cloning and genetically engineering food products, and, you know, especially taking away the consumer's right to know by not requiring labeling of genetically modified products, the more people are going to turn to organics as an alternative. I mean, look at Walmart selling organic products now.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely reached the mainstream.
Yeah, I used to work for one of the country's largest meat producers, and they were experimenting with a line of organic meat products, and the biggest limitation was the limit of organic feed that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were essentially buying all that they could.
Right. We're seeing that in our industry. I mean, we tried to increase the hop order, and we have contracts up to 3 years out to make sure that we're going to have organic hops, and we're trying to increase our inventory of hops because we're starting to supply breweries, and we came up against a brick wall. They're like, we're sold out. You know, it's the demand is exceeding the supply now. You know, our first loyalty is to our retail customers, so, you know, definitely home brewers don't need to worry that we'll run out of, you know, most of our best organic hops. But, you know, we were already turning breweries away for some of the hops.
Ah.
We just can't. We don't have enough, and we can't get more until a couple of years or next year at least.
Well, that's I would guess that that's a good problem to have, sort of. You know, you have the demand, and as long as you can push that demand to the suppliers to let them know so that they can rework things, I would guess that that would be a good problem to have.
Definitely. I mean, I would love to see, you know, the demand is there and the market is there for somebody in this country to commercially grow organic hops. I mean, it's frustrating that it hasn't happened. I've spoken with a woman up in Canada who has a brewery up there, and they grow a lot of their own hops, and she had some interesting insights. You know, it's to be successful, it is a different way of growing. You know, it's, if somebody was serious about it, they would learn organic methods and you know, really dedicate themselves to using them. And, you know, not just relying on conventional, you know, methods of, you know, one example that was pointed out, and one of the reasons the last commercial American hop grower failed is they were irrigating with spray irrigation instead of putting in drip lines, which meant that mildew grew more readily on the plants.
So they encourage the problem.
The organic way of thinking is you put in drip lines so that the upper foliage doesn't get too damp.
So some common sense things that they can think about that will prevent them from having the problem in the first place that they would have to treat with pesticides later on.
Right, right. Like keeping the, you know, enough airflow through the plants, trimming the lower branches, you know, pruning away diseased, anything that's starting to get infested or diseased, just cutting it off the plant right away, you know, very common sense things, but things that take some labor on a large scale.
I know you're busy, and I want to let you get back to work. But any final words to sway people if they're leaning toward organic, but don't know why, you know, don't know if they should or not, you know, what are the final arguments that you use for home brewers?
Well, one is for certain, don't knock it if you haven't tried it. You know, definitely, you know, you have a lot to gain. there's some great ingredients, great recipes. I mean, we have a line of beer kits. It's a good way to start because we've taken the troubleshooting out of, you know, working with unusual ingredients. And good beer. It doesn't get better than that.
the proof of the beers and the tasting.
Yeah, a lot of my brews have won awards in home brewing contests. A lot of our customers, like last year, our local county fair best of show winner was one of our customers who brewed it organic.
Well, Amelia, I certainly appreciate your time, and I wish you luck.
Thank you, and you as well.
Well, thanks again to Amelia for taking time to talk to us. You can find a link to Seven Bridges Cooperative in the description of this episode on basicbrewing.com, or just go to breworganic.com. Well, next week we'll talk to Adam Avery of Avery Brewing Company about Collaboration, Not Litigation Ale, a beer that Adam brewed cooperatively with Vinny Chalurzo of Russian River. It's a fun story, and we'll get a peek behind the scenes in that landmark brewing session. We'll also talk to Adam about what it's like to work in the collaborative atmosphere that craft brewing is enjoying today. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In Basic Brewing, Introduction to Extract Homebrewing, our first DVD, we'll walk you through the extract brewing process step by step, from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process, from milling your grain to collecting your wort. And, you know, it's really not as hard as you might think. In fact, it's fun. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it from us online. I'll pack it up myself. Also, be sure to look for our new Brewer's Logbook. Just got a few left. And thanks again to everyone who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are the Alaskan Bootlegger's Bible and Atlas NT 370 Nitrile Garden and Work Gloves, Black Tulip, Small. I don't know. I think this little section's funny. Yeah, hope you do too. And if not, you know, it's at the end. I've got to do something to amuse myself. Well, thanks again, everybody, who has clicked on the Amazon.com link. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so, you know, no worries there. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson, our man in Austin, Texas, who also did our logo. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time. So long, everybody.